Welcome back to the No Halftime Podcast. This is James Davis, and that is
Doug Norrie.
Yeah, and we're from DFSR, that's DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, and we are here to take over the podcast, Doug. We talked to our good friends Dave and Bruce over No Halftime, and this is our second time taking over the podcast. We will do that again two more times throughout the course of the NFL season to kind of keep you up to date on what we've been doing in terms of both entering No Halftime challenges, thinking about No Halftime strategy, and sharing the No Halftime app, which is sweet, with the broader audience out there. So if you are new to No Halftime, No Halftime is basically, it's the first of its kind fantasy sports app. It allows users to create one-on-one fantasy matchups in all of your favorite sports. So basically, with like all those times when you're sitting at the bar and your buddy says, Brady's going to kill Rodgers this week, you have a great way to settle that bet without having to be in the same, whatever, season-long fantasy league where you each got those guys in your draft. And at the end of the week, you were right, you get the cash. If not, he does. So really, really cool for that. So today, we are going to talk about what we've been learning from No Halftime so far this season. I mean, we've been playing No Halftime, I guess, for, I don't know, a year, year and a half. I guess probably since the app was launched, since I think we were one of the inaugural sponsors when Dave and Bruce and his team launched the app a while back. But this season, we've been getting a lot more into being intentional, thinking about strategy, kind of trying to figure out where the edges are. As the DFS industry matures, I think that the edge has been whittled down in many places, but I think there's still a lot of edge to be had over at No Halftime. So if you go over there, if you're listening on the DFSR feed, go over to No Halftime, download the app, and use promo code DFSR. You can get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit. So Doug, you've been grinding away at No Halftime all season. What are some big things that you've been learning so far, and how can you help us make some money?
Yeah, No Halftime's a great product for a couple reasons, I think, and not just because they have us on the podcast and wanting to talk
good,
about
buddy.
It. No, No Halftime is great because it offers a couple of unique scenarios that you don't really get in your standard DFS play. One is you kind of, you know, obviously you don't need to worry about salaries. And this seems like it wouldn't matter because you think,
that's where the edge comes from, right?
Well, exactly. Like you think that, okay, I'm going to do all my work, get using these salaries and working them into just kind of like, you know, one package that's going to be my team for the week or my teams for the week. And it would seem on its face like these one-on-one challenges really wouldn't have an edge. But in the aggregate, they really do. And that's mostly because I think there's a couple things we can learn from No Halftime. One is that I'm not sure people completely understand the scoring on No Halftime. That's like on the user, not No Halftime. It's you know, published very clearly what the scoring is. But slightly different than your standard regular DFS fantasy scoring. And I think that matters. We can get into that. And the other is that No Halftime really plays on the idea for our purposes, we can really play on the idea that people just like rooting for certain players. Like you said, like when you're sitting in the bar, or like, you know, on the couch on Sunday, and you're talking to your buddy. People, if we've learned nothing from sports, it's that people are very emotionally invested in the guys that they root for. And
You tell someone that Antonio Brown has lost a step, they'll take that as like a personal challenge, like a personal affront, like you made fun of their sister. You know,
so. Exactly. And No Halftime, really, you're really able to exploit that at No Halftime. Because people just see that picture of their favorite player, and they just want to take a challenge from it, even if it's a totally EV negative or minus EV prop. It kind of doesn't matter. So we've been able to throw out challenges that, on their surface, I mean, from our purposes, don't seem like so there's a kind of No Halftime user that will go out and throw out like the completely crazy challenge, like the Le'Veon Bell versus like, you know, Elijah McGuire or something like that. Like something that, you know, something that makes completely no sense. But there's other ones that you can accept and challenge that to us aren't even that close either, and still can get them accepted. I think because people, like I said, don't understand those two philosophies, the scoring and that like their favorite player doesn't always mean that their favorite player is gonna like perform for them this week, you know, hand them the game ball after the game for being such a good fan. So I think we can talk about some of those things today. And I don't know what you want to start with, because what I did this week is I threw out a bunch of challenges and accepted a bunch of challenges, and we can roll through those and we can talk about, you know, why we did and if you agree with them or not. But do we want to talk about the fan piece or the scoring piece first?
No, let's talk about your challenges. I think that's a good place to begin, because I think that will bring some of these concepts to light, because I think a lot of the challenges you've both thrown out and accepted from what we were talking about earlier, we'll kind of highlight these various concepts, and then from there we can perhaps move on.
Okay, so the first one is when I'm talking about fan, I'm gonna kind of wrap that into that plus like recent narrative. Like, you know, fantasy people love themselves a narrative, man. Holy cow! Like, you know, we had someone in our chat room last week come up and say, you know, you don't like Jay Ajayi this week? You know, this is in the London game for Miami.
That's
I said,
great.
No? Yeah. I said, absolutely not. And I'm just not a guy that I'm interested in playing at all. And their counter to that was, well, he has 30 family and friend members in the crowd watching him today. And I wrote, so? Question mark.
Yeah, so he's going to run faster than he normally can, and he's going to be stronger. Like, isn't
but
that
people, people absolutely love these kind of narratives, right? And so if you can grasp onto these in situations where the guy isn't like necessarily wanting to perform, I think you can scoop up a ton of challenges that way. But the other one is just kind of riding, looking at players who had performed well last week and are names and are popular, and basically throwing out challenges in the opposite direction of them. So one guy, you know, I like your opinion on here is Cam Newton. So Cam has struggled all season long. He struggled all season long up until last week. He actually wasn't even particularly good last week, but they beat the Patriots. He struggled. He went through a kind of disaster 2016 season. Do you see Cam as – Cam's a guy that I began throwing out challenges basically anybody. Like my note to myself when I was like starting my strategy for no halftime this week was anybody versus Cam. Do you think a guy like Newton, is he a public figure enough? And like coming off the big week, do you think people are going to be wanting to accept challenges? I could throw out some of the guys that I threw out against him, obviously. But, you know, do you see that strategy as viable with a, you know, we'll call him a public player. You know, we have some public teams in football and baseball. You know, the Packers are a public team. The Cowboys are a public team. There's also just public players, like guys who, you know, the general rooting fan probably thinks are better than they really are. Do you agree with me that Cam like falls into that category?
I think so. I mean, so there are some signs of life from Cam this season, like the completion percentage is back up. Obviously, you know, they won some close games. They're 3-1, so you could argue that the team is just using him as much as they need to. Really, he only had one terrible game in terms of actual performance, and that was against New Orleans. I still think, though, that if you throw Cam out there against someone, I don't know, like Marcus Mariota, like someone who is not quite that big smiling figure who, you know, rookie of the year type of player, that you can get some value there. So I'm curious to know exactly who you put him up against, but I think generally, yes, people are going to tend to overrate players that have been on their fantasy teams or whose names they recognize, frankly, you know, rather than players who, you know, are a little bit more obscure. Maybe they're not as big a name for general fantasy purposes, but could outcompete Cam just given his sort of declining skill set.
So when I throw out a challenge, from our projection system, I want the spread to be pretty. I don't want it to be that thin, right? I don't want to be going into a no halftime challenge as a coin flip, right? I'm going to set like somewhat arbitrary number at 1.5 points more projected for any other player. So like that's
via our system over at DFSR.com. If you're listening on the No Halftime podcast, we actually do have a projection tool that users can use to figure out exactly how many points our system projects them to score each week, just to give people some context.
For sure. So I use about 1.5 points as the difference in where I'm kind of willing to start accepting a challenge or throwing out a challenge. Because I think, that's a little bit arbitrary, but that's right in like that 20% range in terms of overall expectation. And I think that is fine to start there. So, I mean, honestly, the list for Cam is long, man. I don't know if you want me to read all the guys, but we have him right now from no halftime scoring as the 18th overall ranked guy. That means if you start up around 1.5 points, you can start throwing out guys like Matthew Stafford, Carson Wentz, Eli Manning would be one that I threw it out there because I'm positive that'll get accepted, right? So like when you look at these, you know, Dak, Phillip Rivers, really anybody. I mean, like he's because almost all the guys above him are quarterbacks. So, you know, I think that really just about until you get into like the Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady area of quarterback, I think really just about any Cam related challenge is going to get accepted because, like I said, he's a name. He's coming off a big week, and there's no way most of the regular, I don't know, just your regular sports fan is believing that Eli Manning or Carson Wentz or Matthew Stafford is going to outscore him in a given week. Again, it's not a guarantee that they're going to, but one thing you can do in the halftime is throw out challenges with all of those guys, right? Like you don't need to. No halftime, you can kind of just aggregate exploit the interface here because you can just throw out those challenge, all three of those challenges, and figure that you're going to say win, I don't know, 66% of them, 70% of them over the course of the season. And I think that's just going to be a really good strategy. Cam falls into that category for me. There's some other guys that do also, like I think Deshaun Watson's coming off a big week, although he's ranked a little bit higher in our system. So, but there's going to be times where using him is going to be kind of fall into that situation. But I think that, you know, just to kind of
Watson, Wentz, these guys, like they've outscored Cam in 3 of the 4 weeks this season. You know, like Eli, I think he's 2-2. Wentz is 3-1 heads up. Watson is 3-1 heads up. So I think that these are all challenges you could get accepted. And so far this season, you would be at a 75% win rate, right? So I think your point is very solid here on Cam in particular.
Yeah, and like, you know, you look at a guy like Eli Manning or Carson Wentz, these guys are, or Stafford, like I know I keep using those as the examples. Alex Smith is another one. These guys are, you know, quote, boring quarterbacks, right? Like, you know, they're not the most exciting fantasy guys to root for. They will break your heart on certain weeks because they have bad games in them. I mean, I'm thinking of Eli specifically, where he just has, you know, he just makes kind of some bonehead choices at times. But all in all, they pass a ton. Like we talked about this on our podcast yesterday when we were talking about looking back at the week that just was. But you know, one thing that's emerging for some of these teams, the Giants are one of them, the Cardinals are one of them, is that they're just forced to throw a ton just because of the way that their team kind of shakes out in terms of their running game. And if you can get these high volume quarterbacks, Rivers is kind of starting to fall into that category as well.
Yeah, Rivers, you can get 3-1 against Cam this year.
Right, exactly. If you can throw out challenges for teams that are going to just be forced to just chuck the ball all day long because the run games are garbage, there's a pretty high floor on that scenario. You know, another guy that falls into that like name category that's ranked pretty low on our list here, Ben Roethlisberger, he's actually ranked even below Cam. And I suspect that, you know, without looking at any projections, most people would say if you put Ben Roethlisberger against all the other quarterbacks that I just mentioned above, that would also be a situation that would get accepted, right? Just because it's Big Ben, man. Like, it's Big Ben. He's for the Steelers. Steelers, another public team. These are guys that people want to root for and probably on their face just think are probably more fantasy viable than they are. So anyway, so long story short is that when you're throwing out challenges, look for those guys that maybe are a little bit more popular, that are maybe a little bit more public figures, and then take a look at some projection systems like ours and start to see where they sort of fall in the overall rankings. And that's just a great way to get challenges accepted.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think the important thing to remember about no halftime is very different from like a salary cap game, because you're not up against a field, right? Like, you're up against an individual that's out there in the world who has a different opinion than you on a single player versus a single player. So to that end, you can be a little bit more judicious in terms of trying to grab an edge. And I think that's like really the superpower of playing your DFS on no halftime rather than elsewhere, is that you know exactly who your opponents are playing. Like, you know, we go into this when we do play salary game, there are salary cap formats where we're like, well, is this guy going to be chalk? Is AJ Green going to be 80%? Well, geez, if he is, like, what if we don't play him? You just eliminate all that. You look at your thing and say, I bet there's somebody out there who thinks that Keenan Allen will outperform AJ Green. So I'll just throw it out there and see if it happens. And if it doesn't, well, no problem. You just get your money back. So from that perspective, I think this methodology, very, very sound for this particular game. Let's jump into some of the other guys or challenges or little kind of scenarios you're noticing right now.
Okay, so the other thing to notice with no halftime is their scoring system. You can kind of gloss over this at times as a standard user and just not really look too much in the system.
Yeah, or it's fantasy, assume, right? I know how that's scored.
Exactly. The fantasy is typically scored in one of two ways, half PPR or full PPR. Like, there's really, those are just typically the only two ways that you're looking at, like from your season long, from daily. That's really typically the only way that fantasy is scoring. No halftime is a little different, though, because it's no PPR. And this is huge. The fact that there's no points awarded for any receptions at all, it does one thing in particular, and then actually really just knocks down running backs and specifically wide receivers a ton in terms of projection, right? Because it's obvious, even running backs that catch the ball at all, losing those like 2.5 points, that I'm talking half PPR because that's like at the minimum, right? So like, let's say you have your high volume running backs like Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley come to mind. These guys that, well, Dalvin Cook was, but until he got hurt, but these guys that that see the ball a ton in their systems, Zeke is another guy, they losing, you know, all the other scoring is the same, the 0.04 for passing yards and 0.1 point for every running yard, or you know, running yard every, or a point every 10 yards. All the other stuff's the same, but taking away 2 to 2.5 points for all those running backs and a lot more for wide receivers, if you're looking at like in the 6 and 7 catch range, really means that you should be throwing out quarterbacks versus kind of anybody in the system to, right. In terms of your challenges. And those quarterbacks that I mentioned before, the list actually gets a lot longer when you look at this scoring method in terms of which quarterbacks you can throw out. Again, like you can basically throw out bad quarterbacks against like good, very good running backs and great wide receivers, and be expected to win, right? So like if we look at like the top scoring from our system, the top scoring expected guys this week, the top five are quarterbacks, then you get Le'Veon Bell, then you get a run of about 8 more quarterbacks, then you get Todd Gurley, then you get about 5 more quarterbacks, and then you fall into the Zeke Kareem Hunt range. And now again, we're talking, this is most of the quarterbacks, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like this is the vast majority of the quarterback playing field, because when you, the simple thing of knocking out those receptions means that you're just losing those two to three points. And by the way, you know, most fantasy scoring systems were made to keep like most players around the same range of scoring, right? Like they want the good players to score around the same. That's why, you know, passing yards are worth less than running yards, because they don't want the quarterbacks to be, they want them to fall all sort of in the same scoring range. People are not.
But to be fair, that hasn't exactly panned out that way, right? Like the highest scoring quarterbacks still tend to be the highest scoring players overall when the season is over, just because they have, even if they're not on any given week, they just have such a higher level of consistency that, you know, like Tom Brady, for instance, is projected as the highest overall point scorer in our system. Aaron Rodgers is second, and then it's Le'Veon Bell, and then it's 3 more quarterbacks, right? So, and that's just for sites with, you know, more of a standard scoring system. But you're saying that taking away any PPR whatsoever kind of shifts it even more in the favor of those quarterbacks.
Oh, 100%. That's exactly right. What it does. It takes really every quarterback and boosts them above. Like I said, you need to go really pretty far down the list. You need to go down to 31 down on the list, or 32 on the list, to find your first wide receiver, and that's Antonio Brown. That means basically every quarterback in the league is projected, apologies to Blake Bortles and Josh McCown. Those guys are actually, Blake Bortles and Josh McCown are underneath Antonio Brown. Except for those two quarterbacks, I mean, even like Mitch Trubisky, like who's got a rookie coming off the bench this year and getting his first start, is ranked above these guys. It's actually close with Trubisky and Brown. But the fact that if you start throwing out challenges with Antonio Brown versus, I don't know, DeShone Kizer, Tyrod Taylor. These are a little bit close in terms of what I said in the 1.5 point scoring. But like Antonio Brown versus Alex Smith versus those quarterbacks I mentioned above that are maybe those quote boring quarterbacks that throw a lot. You, with this scoring system, you are going to get those challenges accepted, and you are going to be a heavy favorite each week. Especially, you know, you mentioned the consistency part of it. Quarterbacks point scoring is incredibly consistent across the board from a week-to-week standpoint. Like their standard deviation is lower, their coefficient of variation is lower. They're just, because they just control their own fate a little bit more than these receivers, they're week-to-week, you can be, you're not guaranteed, you don't have a crystal ball here, but if you have a solid projection system like ours, you can make a pretty reasonable assumption on a week-to-week basis of where these quarterbacks are going to score. And so if you spend a year throwing, and I say a year because you really need your no halftime sample size to like to kind of go out over the long term as well. But if you spend a year throwing out no quarterbacks versus best wide receivers challenges, again, like you do all your quarterbacks, like you throw out I'll even throw Cam back into this mix too, because he's projected to score outscore Antonio Brown as well. But if you just spend a year throwing out Manning, Wentz, Stafford, Cam, Phillip Rivers, Mariota against the Antonio Browns, Julio Joneses, these big wide receivers, yep, you are going to be a heavy, heavy favorite because of the scoring system.
Yeah, I think that's a great insight. I mean, it's always, you know, with how efficient DFS has become in general, looking for these little edges, I think, is always important. But it's particularly interesting to do on No Halftime because, like you mentioned, kind of in the fan piece or the public player piece, there's just going to be that intuition that people get, right? That feeling. We see this in the baseball version of No Halftime, taking bad pitchers against great hitters, Bryce Harper, whoever, where you go in there and there's just something that feels wrong about seeing, you know, Deshaun Watson over Antonio Brown, say going into last week or whatever, right? Like, or especially one of these boring Alex Smith, you know, the Andy Dalton, you know, like you take these guys and you're like, Andy Dalton will not outscore Antonio Brown. And then you realize, oh yeah, I'm just shaving off 5 points from his FanDuel expectation thing, for instance, right? Like, you know, or whatever right. your kind of conventional salary cap format game would be. So yeah, I think it's a great approach. And I suspect you're going to make a lot of money. So you think Antonio Brown is the guy to sit in there, or is there another wide receiver you're targeting? Or since it's no halftime, you just do all of them?
I would never do a wide receiver. I would almost never do a wide receiver versus any other position challenge. Take the wide receiver.
How about running back? What about the running backs? I mean, so quarterbacks are obviously, you know, they get this edge against the field. Running backs and wide receivers are both sort of penalized, right? So
They are, but running backs are penalized less because the running back typically is getting the running back. By the way, it is closer here, so I'm not as bullish on taking the. There's only about 5 running backs I would take over, let's say, Antonio Brown, and those are all getting pretty close. I mean, that's not true because Le'Veon Bell exists pretty damn near the top of the chain here in terms of overall expectation. But once you get below Bell, Todd Gurley is another one whose usage has been just absolutely crazy through the roof this year and doesn't look like that's going to change at all. Ezekiel Elliott and then Kareem Hunt. Those are the 4 running backs. And then actually the grouping gets pretty a little bit tighter. So I probably overstated a little bit. I'm mostly just talking quarterbacks versus wide receivers. There is a group of running backs, a small group that are in the elite category of just overall touches. And that's the thing that keeps them above their wide receiver counterparts because they just stand the... They just stand to see the ball so much more. Now, again, they're not chewing up yards at the same clip. Like Antonio Brown is getting many more yards per reception than Le'Veon Bell is getting per run. But, I mean, look at Le'Veon Bell. He touched the ball like 35 times last game. Oh, no, excuse me. He touched the ball 40 times last game. And you take that 40, that expectation is too high. But if you pencil some of these guys in for, like, let's say, 25 to 26 touches on a given week, which is where that group exists, that kind of volume is going to outstrip some of the even the most elite wide receivers. Now, again, after you get outside of that top 5, top 6 group of guys whose teams just basically are running them into the ground, it does get a little bit closer. So I'm mostly talking about quarterbacks in that situation.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. And I think it kind of speaks to, I think another reason quarterbacks are good, and I alluded to this earlier, and I guess maybe we can move into something I've learned about no halftime so far, is also just the consistency, right? I mean, even if... say Le'Veon Bell is going to have that one breakout week where he just absolutely goes off and is the play of the week and, you know, wins everyone their season long leagues or whatever. There's still going to be weeks at other positions where he just doesn't have as good a week, right? Now he's a little bit of an exception just because he's such a high caliber player, you know, arguably the best position player, fantasy player, but still those first 2 weeks of the season, 6 points against Cleveland, 11 points against Minnesota, frankly, even 18.8 points against Chicago the next week. Like those first 2 weeks, basically every quarterback in the NFL would have beaten him, right? And sure, he comes out and scores 33 points and outscores all but one or two quarterbacks last week, and that's all well and good. But like, I think people generally underrate why consistency is important. And this goes back to, you know, what we were sort of talking about in the difference between no halftime and a salary cap format game. And that's because, like, in a salary cap format game, consistency is baked into price, right? Like, you rarely play sort of those mid-range, very consistent players because their price is fair. You're not really getting a value. So, having trouble thinking of a good example. We'll go to baseball for a second. Say you're taking a guy like Aaron Judge early in the season when he was just going off week in, week out, just putting up home runs, just putting up numbers. Jose Altuve actually might even be a better example for baseball purposes, but putting up huge numbers. Eventually, the site's correct, and they remain at a pretty fair price where you'll play them if you have a lot of cheap plays, but you won't prioritize them for value. Well, football has the same phenomenon. From quarterback to running back, there are a number of players, and wide receiver this happens too, there are a number of players who you sort of won't play because they do pretty much the same thing every week, and you don't get value. Now, no halftime doesn't care about that, right? Like, again, there's no salaries. So your opponents out there need to sort of do that calculation for themselves. So if you bring a quarterback in, like Eli Manning, say, Eli Manning, generally speaking, not the most exciting fantasy player, but when he just goes out there and scores, you know, 15-ish fantasy points a game, that's going to be a better on average than basically every skill position player. So you can take him, and if you take it consistently and you stick with it over the course of the season, sometimes you get blown out, but many times you just get that Antonio Brown week where he goes like 10 catches for 120 yards is 12 fantasy points. Every quarterback in the NFL is going to beat that, right? So, I think that's just the big thing for me is figuring out what factors will lead to greater consistency. And this isn't reinventing the wheel, because we already told you that we want to play quarterbacks over other positions, but really looking at that more carefully. You know, there's a calculation we've used in the past called the coefficient of variation, which basically is a way to measure how consistently a guy is putting up the same numbers. And taking that into account, I think will do big wonders for your bankroll in no halftime, where upside just doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You don't need the upside. You don't need to hit like that Deshaun Watson week from last week. Like, I know, you know, where he just kind of is a $5,000 player on DraftKings, and all of a sudden, you know, scores you 6x fantasy points. You're not necessarily worried about that kind of performance. You're really actually not even looking for that kind of performance, right? You're like, it's nice to have, and it's nice to get if you, like, for some reason chose, like, Deshaun Watson against Tom Brady on a given week, which I don't know why you would do, but in that situation, I guess, like, you're feeling happy, but you're really not looking for that kind of thing. You're looking for consistent performance of play. You look at a guy like, you know, let's say Philip Rivers, again, like, boring kind of quarterback, not a guy, and I guess if Chargers fans can be believed, because there's like four of them at this point, because they're not filling out, they're not even selling out like the soccer stadium that they play in. So there's about six or seven LA Chargers fans at this point. But if you look at a guy like Philip Rivers on a given week, he's basically locked into right around 38 passing attempts every single week, mm-hmm. whether they're winning or losing, right? So like that kind of part doesn't matter. And then at that point, he's good for about a touchdown and a half to two touchdowns, somewhere in that range. And if you look at his performances this year, and by the way, this is against some good defenses as well, 19 points, 17 points, 6 points. So a down week, you lost that week with against Kansas City, and then 19 points. You basically won, I would, you know, 75% of your no halftime challenges that you had with Philip Rivers. Now, again, I'm assuming you're not playing him against Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or something like that. You're putting him up against some of the guys that we mentioned before, some of those wide receiver running backs, or maybe even, you know, a slightly lesser quarterback like Cam. You're essentially winning most weeks with guys like this, because his usage, unlike the running backs, you know, so, you know, we do our projection system. One of the ways that we've found a lot of accuracy, and most people that do projections will do this, is to figure out usage on a given week, right? To look at these running backs, to look at the receivers, and try to figure out what their target share is going to be, what their, you know, what the run game is going to look like, baking in how Vegas kind of supports, you know, games where running backs are going to go off, or where wide receivers are going to be there, and kind of bringing our whole system in line at times with Vegas odds and implied totals to make sure that we're pretty close. And our system is actually able to get really, really drill down really close in this. Now, one place that we almost make no adjustments on is quarterback, right? Because quarterbacks just kind of do the same thing every week. Like, yeah. if you're a 36 passing attempt quarterback, you're kind of just a 36 passing attempt quarterback. Now, it can be boring and it can not be that sexy to talk about. It's amazingly consistent, and the quarter, like you said, with coefficient of variation, that's why we see these quarterbacks that really just not fluctuate much over the course of a season, because quarterbacks do what they do, and if you can figure that part of it out, you have a huge edge on no halftime.
Yeah, for sure. And I think another kind of correlating element to the quarterback consistency piece is looking at players with any sort of injury risk going into a week. Again, since we're not really looking at upside, I think we can tap into, you know, it's an information battle, right? Anytime you're playing DFS or any sort of fantasy sports contest or placing any sort of wager or playing a game of skill, it's a battle of information. And I think if we can look at guys, I think even if you just took guys that were generally supposed to be even and then looked for people with the questionable tag and took the other side, I think that you're in pretty good shape. So like a guy going into this week might be Carlos Hyde, right? He's expected to play. That's great. But he's been limited in practice. You know, his hip seems to be bothering him. You know, generally speaking, he's been good this season. But if you can take him against someone who take someone against him, where the industry is kind of like neutral on someone. So maybe you take him against, I don't know. I mean, you probably can't even get Leonard Fournette accepted at this point. Maybe like Jordan Howard or somebody, right? Like somebody who you look at it and, well, Jordan Howard might not be a great example either. Just take someone that you think is basically the same skill level as Carlos Hyde and say, okay, well, given that he has these slight injury issues, there's some chance that he just misses two series. You know, like things like that really, really go a long way. In the wide receiver realm, I don't know, Jordy Nelson comes to mind. He's had three terrific weeks, and then 1 week he disappeared completely because he just left the game early with a quad injury. If you can figure out, you know, Odell Beckham might be another example like that. Well,
stop there for 1 second, because you don't know this, but I have a list of no halftime challenges that I threw out and accepted last week.
Oh.
One actually is, this is crazy, that's why it's crazy you just mentioned these two guys as examples. One was a Jordy Nelson Carlos Hyde challenge. Now, ooh. I instantly took that. It wasn't even close for me. When I'm talking about these wide receiver versus running back plays. Now look, let's call them injury neutral, because they both have like little question marks or like slightly dinged up, right? So like at that point you can maybe possibly wash the injury piece aside. But if we have a quarterback and a running, or excuse me, a wide receiver and a running back challenge that gets thrown out there. This is why I like guys like Jordy that are pretty popular players on a public team, the Packers, right? Like, he's a popular guy. Yep. And we have a Carlos Hyde situation where his usage is creeping toward that that elite group that I mentioned before, right. Like the Zeke and Kareem Hunt and Le'Veon kind of group, Gurley. That group of guys that, again, they exist on their own plane. Carlos Hyde's right behind them in terms of usage.
Jordy, meanwhile, just totally touchdown dependent, right? Like, I can look into my crystal ball and see that you're probably going to mention that so far he has no more than 7 receptions in any given game and 79 receiving yards. So that doesn't tend to turn into, you know, so let's see, 17 receptions, 5 of which have gone for touchdowns. That doesn't seem like a sustainable ratio to me, huh?
No, not at all. And again, like, these are popular guys, and I love when I see challenges like this crop up, because if we're going down the chain of consistency, especially for this year too, we go consistency coefficient of variation, quarterback first, elite running back second tier running back, a group behind, but still above that top tier of wide receiver outside of like Antonio Brown. Like, he's one of like the few exceptions in terms of just like amazingly consistent receiver. Now, Jordy in the past has been that guy as well, and we have him ranked pretty high. Like, he still have him as the second overall wide receiver going into this week, right above Mike Evans. But still pretty bullish on Jordy, and the touchdown thing does matter. But I'll happily take Hyde. We have Hyde for 1.25 more points, and I'm just much more comfortable with the way that the Niners have been using him over the course of the season, that I'm just completely fine, and I instantly took that challenge. So it was just interesting that you use those two guys as examples. Should we go through a couple more challenges I'll do some ones that I accepted. I'll give you who they are, and then I won't tell you which side I took. We'll see if we can kind of figure out which side of these you would take, and then I'll go out some that I created. Sound good?
Yeah, well, it does. Let me give you one more little stat to kind of follow up on your point about I was looking at something on the DFSR leaderboard that was a little wonky. I think that one more stat to keep in mind as we try to figure out who the consistent plays and who aren't. You know, we have actually been part of the group that's been making a buzz about how there have been more 100-yard receivers overall this season than there have been 100-yard rushers. But what's interesting is that from week to week, it's very hard to know who those people will be. So even though the NFL is passing more than it used to, figuring out who's going to be the person who actually gets all of those targets and receptions and gets the yards is a lot more difficult. So, you know, let's see here. There's, I think there's 4 or 5 running backs that have more total yards than the top overall receiver, who's Stephon Diggs, who, good luck if you could have guessed that anyway. So, yeah, in the consistency department, it's just a long way of saying I continue to appreciate running backs over receivers.
And then remember, snap off those points per receptions also too. Like, so take away, so put the yards below them, and then take away the other point that in most fantasy, the other way that they accrue their fantasy points in a pretty significant way, 4 to 5 points for some of these elite guys in half point PPR, you're going to knock them down even more. Let me throw out a couple these. So I threw out the Carlos Hyde, Jordy Nelson one. I took the Hyde. Another one I saw come up was Michael Crabtree versus Kelvin Benjamin. Guys, you know, so these guys are kind of they're very different, but they're very different just in terms of how they accrue their points. But is there a side of that, the Crabtree Benjamin side, that you would take?
Picking between Michael Crabtree and Kelvin Benjamin, I mean, it's really close because they both have their warts to me. I mean, I suppose, like, if Crabtree's healthy, I would always take Crabtree in a heartbeat, but his health actually makes him feel pretty risky. I think that overall, that's just a stay away for me.
And also remember, and maybe this just hadn't come up, but Derek Carr is out this week also. So he has EJ Manuel throwing to him. Now, I have no love for Kelvin Benjamin, and I have no love for Cam Newton either. Like, I don't think that they're all that good. They're definitely an overrated tandem, a wide receiver. But the EJ Manuel downgrade from Derek Carr had me easily take Benjamin in this scenario, because the fact that he's a little, the Crabtree's a little bit dinged up and playing with his backup quarterback had me on the Benjamin side. Again, this is like, I was really high on Benjamin at the start of the season, and then I'm taking the L on that one. There's a couple wide receivers that I'm taking the losses on going into this year. Terrell Pryor's in that group as well, though he finally caught a touchdown this week. Benjamin's one of them, but the other pieces surrounding Crabtree with the backup quarterback and the injury have me fine taking those guys. Here's another one that I saw on No Halftime. I did not accept this one, but it was close. T.Y. Hilton or Chris Hogan?
I think I go Chris Hogan, just on the consistency piece. Hilton's quarterback play is worse. I think Hogan is kind of rounding into that Wes Welker-ish sort of role, the possession receiver in New England. Yeah, a gun to my head. And I'm trying to do this blind, by the way. I'm trying to do this without looking at our tool. So with my intuition says Hogan there.
No, yeah, and that's fine. And you can just assume that I was using the tool when I was taking these. So we're going to be on the same page. I know Hogan was the play.
Well, that's fine. Sure. I'm using the tool. I just don't want to agree with you. I'm out of hand. I want to try and figure out.
No. I think that's right. I think that's fine. I think that, like, if we're looking at this from like just a no halftime, just kind of like user standpoint, I think that's typically how most people are going to go into this. And there are going to be times when just using your sort of eye is going to be correct. Football is one of those sports that it's very public in nature. A lot of people know about it. It is sometimes hard to have a huge edge in football because of that, because the player pool is pretty small, and the knowledge base among the regular fan is a lot higher than really any other sport. Like, people are able, I think it's because of the time.
Yeah, I don't think their overall knowledge is necessarily better. It's just that there's only 16 games and you just get 6 days to make a decision, right? So,
right.
Well, just look at it and look at it and look at it and look at it. But yeah,
a couple more that were out here. I'm interested to hear your opinion on this one. So it's Latavius Murray or Joe Mixon. You know, just in the background here, for those that don't know, Latavius Murray could be the fill-in for Dalvin Cook now that he's hurt. And Mixon is a guy who, man, it seems like the Bengals...
Yeah, long on opportunity, low on either talent or a line to block for him, sure.
Yeah, so, like, you know, we're going to put them in, like, you know, possibly emerging running backs. Is there a side of that you would like more, the Mixon side or the Murray side?
Yeah, I take Mixon. I think his opportunity is more known at this point. I mean, even last game, they were rolling out Bernard and Hill a little bit more early in the game. They turned it over to Mixon. Even though it wasn't going well, they kept giving him the ball. So given that Murray could be just in a pure timeshare, he might not touch the ball at all. Like, it's total speculation at this point. I would just go with Mixon as the more known quantity in my mind. Even though he hasn't done a whole lot just yet, I think it's more likely that he turns, you know, 15 to 18 touches into some reasonable fantasy performance than Murray, first of all, gets the 15 to 18 touches in the first place and then turns that into more fantasy performance.
No, I completely agree, and it can be easy. I think at times you can look at a guy like Latavius Murray as like this kind of like shiny new thing that's, you know, coming out to take over for to spell the guy who was hurt. But this is a situation where I think I kind of would also go Mixon, although it's a little close. I think one that I have that I also saw that actually I stopped for a long time and looked at: Jason Witten or Evan Engram. Now again, like, we're drilling down deep into the tight end versus tight end group here, but I did see this one up there, the Witten or Engram side. Is there a side that you would... I stared at this one for a long time, but I ultimately did not accept it, but is there a side that you would accept in the Witten versus Engram?
Ooh, it's pretty close. I mean, Engram, of course, coming out last week, getting a ton of target share, being one of the most targeted tight ends in the NFL, relative unknown, so you can get the public player correlation there. The problem with Witten is that, yeah, like, on some level you're tapping into someone's emotions and saying, like, he's the known player, like, he's been the TE2 on your season-long league before, and so, you know, he kind of has had some success, but he still kind of is targeted in that offense. I know he wasn't very good last week, but he does have 3 good weeks prior to that, so I feel like you could get that challenge accepted and maybe you would have an edge, but that doesn't really feel like it clears the bar for me in terms of a wide enough disparity that I would want to invest my limited no halftime budget in.
Yo, this was a $100 challenge, and this is why I stood and stared at it for a while.
Ability
to take the Engram side.
I can't believe someone would go to all that work to put that challenge out there, because they're so confident. Basically, they're trying to... whoever put that challenge out there is saying Ingram is the one weak wonder, right? Like he's going to go back to where he came from.
I take it back. It might have been a 25 or 50. It was a higher challenge. Hunter might have been high. Sure. Not that, but anyway, it speaks to, you know, I usually tend to blanket the no halftime with in the $5 and $10 range, just because I want to spread out a lot of these challenges over the course of the thing, or the course of the season. But this was getting up into the $25 to $50 range, and I stared at this a long time, and I was sorely tempted to take Ingram because he's been very consistent with his target share, and it's actually been increasing week to week in a way that really makes you feel pretty good. It's actually going the opposite direction of Witten on a team that is going to be forced to pass basically the whole season long, like I said with Eli Manning before. So I started that one for a while. Ultimately, chickened out, did not accept it. And I feel like I'm going to regret it because I think Ingram has a pretty healthy edge in that scenario. All right, the last couple that I created.
Let's do one more and then we got to run because we're out of time.
Yep, okay. So anyway, we'll just go through Todd Gurley versus Kareem Hunt. We'll go to the top end of guys here. And by the way, the other ones I created were all against Cam. So we can kind of skip over that part. But we'll go into the top end of running back. Gurley or Hunt, do you have an intuition about where you would go here?
That one's really close. It kind of falls into... I mean, I feel like you could get the Gurley side accepted sort of out of hand. Like, it wouldn't be very difficult. I feel like Gurley, based on so far this season... I mean, the big question between Gurley and Hunt is, do you trust Hunt's usage, or has he just been so good on limited usage, the point you've made on our normal podcast, that he would actually get Gurley-level usage if someone just tackled him sooner, you know?
Right.
So that one feels a little too close to me. I don't know if I would jump on it. If I did, with a gun in my head, I think I would say Gurley, just because the demonstrated... He has a track record a couple seasons ago being this consistent. It seems like the full-on plan for the Rams at this point. I guess I would say Gurley, and with the caveat, I probably wouldn't take it.
Yep, I took the Gurley side of that as well. I actually created the Gurley side because I do think I see that as a spread. I am banking on the idea that Hunt has run hot, maybe run a little hotter on the yards per carry, and that the usage is not going to be
a tough matchup too. I mean,
Todd Gurley is this could be the final point, but Todd Gurley is moving dangerously close to we don't want this guy to be playing in a year and a half sort of territory of usage, yeah. Right? And you get limited windows on guys like this, and then the times where you have them, you really need to capitalize because they do not come around often. That being said, if in a year and a half Todd Gurley was out of the NFL because he was hurt and the legs had he basically completely run out of gas, I wouldn't be surprised. But get while the getting's good on a guy like Gurley, because you just don't see this kind of usage outside of Le'Veon Bell or David Johnson when he's healthy. So jump on that while you can. And like I said, just to wrap up, the idea is quarterback when it comes to no halftime, because you really have a significant edge there.
Yeah, quarterback is greater than running back, is greater than wide receiver, is greater than tight end would probably be the theme. All right, so I think that's it for us for today. This is James Davis and Doug Norrie again from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com. That's DFSR.com for short. And we are taking over the No Halftime podcast if you're listening on our feed. So please do head on over to nohalftime.com. If you're on Android, you can download their app there. If you use iTunes, for anything that uses iOS, you can head over there and download the app as well. So that's it for us for today. You can also follow No Halftime at NHalftime on Twitter, or you can follow us at DailyFantasySR. But that's it for now, buddy. We did it. 40 minutes. Let's go.
Yeah, no halftime. Throw those challenges out there. See you in the app.
Yeah, buddy. Bye.